welcome back to another special episode of the Epic Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce, and tonight I'm not joined by anybody. Lux is unavailable, and it's just me, lonely old me. So, it's going to be a little bit shorter, and hopefully I keep everybody's entertained here, so we'll see how this one goes. But, you know, doing these by myself has never been easy, so we'll see how we go. Couple housekeeping features before we get into the rest of the show. Don't forget, if you enjoy the content here on the show each and every week, you can check us out on thelotuscouncil.com. That is our home on the internet, and it is where our podcast gets posted each and every week. But there's also some really cool things happening over the Lotus Council. They have a Twitch stream. They've got a live gameplay or arena streaming. They've got box breaks. They've got, you know, almost everything you'd want. But the biggest piece there is their Discord. Their Discord is free to join. It's just a great place where you can meet some new people who love to play Magic, who love to talk about EDH. Lux and I are often there each and every week. We can test for just how good the people in there are. There's lots of people setting up maybe EDH gameplay, over webcam, whatever it is people are looking into to get into. So if you love Magic, you love playing EDH, you're looking for a great place, a great home somewhere on the internet, the lotuscouncil.com is perfect. Come and check them out. The link will be in the show notes down below. You will not be sorry. Tonight's show, we're going to be divided into three segments. We're going to have our garbage or great. We're going to have... segment two, we're going to look at some MH2 and some D&D previews that were released. Not all of them, because there were more that came out today that I haven't had a chance to process yet, folks. Sorry. And then we'll have a deck. Just like always, we have a deck that's a little special to me. It's something I have brewed up a long time ago. Something special. All right. So let's get down to business. Segment one, garbage or great. Tonight's card is Siphon Sliver. For 2 and a black, for a 2/2 sliver, sliver creatures you control have lifelink. And, you know, this came out of M14, which doesn't seem that long ago, and is, you know, look amazingly, you know, almost $9 in price. Whether this is garbage or great really depends on whether or not you're into slivers or you're not. That's really the crux of it. If you're into slivers and you're the sliver deck, you love this guy. This guy's great. You want to put every sliver you can find in your five-color slivers tribal deck. And this guy goes right on in. If you're not playing slivers, you don't want this. Right? You're not just going to put it in anything else. You're going to put it in your sliver deck. That's it. And so, you know, I was looking at EDH Rec... You know, how many decks can play it. Like, it appears in 2,800 decks, which is, you know, not crazy. All the commanders who play it are pretty much universally Sliver commanders. So Sliver Overlord, Sliver Hive Lord, Sliver Legion, the first Sliver, Sliver Queen, and Morophon, which is code for more Slivers. So all of these are just sliver decks. And so this card is very, very niche. Goes in one style of deck. And if you don't have that style of deck, you don't want it. All right, folks. It's really hard to make a convincing case from this in any other scenario other than your sliver deck. So it's not garbage, but it is very, very niche. And so if you want a copy... for your sliver deck, go ahead. It's $9. It's not cheap, but you already know that because you're building the sliver deck. So, good card. Just you really got to go in the right spot, or else you don't really, really do not want it. All right, segment two, previews. There's a whole bunch of previews that came out, and so I'm going to go through the ones that I found when I was doing this. Let's start with some of the MH2 spoilers. So we have some reprints. So first off, we have Force of Negation. Force of Negation appears to be getting... whoops, maybe not. Because my link is no longer... Yeah, there it is. Oh, maybe not. Oh, let's see. I'm pretty sure I saw Force of Negation. Maybe I'm imagining myself. No. Oh, yeah. Where is this? Where is this? I don't see force negation. Maybe I'm talking up my posterior here. I'm sorry, folks. Could have sworn I had a card, a printing of force of negation in old border, but I don't see it any longer. So maybe I'm just talking out my bum. So, all right, we'll skip that one. But Cabal Coffers is getting reprinted, and Cabal Coffers is sweet. Cabal Coffers is a land. 2, tap, add black for each swamp you control. And it is about $100 in all the other iterations of it. So the Torment version is $111. There's an FNM promo from 2007, which is $98.65. And there's a plane chase version at $87. So you're talking about an expensive card. It wasn't uncommon, printed in Torment and in plane chase. But now it is being upshifted to a mythic because the EV calculations inside a box. But it's good to print this one. They need to reprint it mucho lucho because it is very good. It is very popular and it very quickly gets gobbled up by all sorts of decks. Particularly anything heavy black. Cabal Coffers. Cabal Coffers appears in a staggering 31,000 decks, or just shy thereof. So it is really popular in mono black decks. So always good to see something that is this popular get reprint, and hopefully makes it a little more affordable for everyone to get a hold of. All right, let's go on to some new cards. So first off, we have Usury, Fortune's Flame. 1 red, blue for a flying Freet. It's a 2/3. And it says, whenever Usury, Fortune's Flame attacks, choose a number between 1 and 5. Flip that many coins. For each flip you win, draw a card. For each flip you lose, Usury deals 2 damage to you. If you won 5 flips this way, you may cast spells from your hand this turn without paying their mana costs. So you're back into the old coin flip deck. This is something that is, you know, part and parcel of what Is It decks are all about. They go through this phase where every so often there's a coin flip commander. This is the latest. The last one I remember being Zinder Split and Oaken from Battle Bond. But anyway, so now we get yet another one. It could be fun, I think, is the fundamental premise. Premise is of a deck where you can draw a bunch of cards every time this attacks, but I'm not in love with this one. I won't be rushing out to make it. I think the body's a little frail, and again, the potential to misfire badly in your coin flips is real. It is a real risk, it is a real problem, and it's not going to get made any easier by you wishing that it wasn't. I'm not a huge fan of Usury. I believe it is either the FAP or the bundle promo or the buy a box promo or something. It's interesting, but I'm not exactly thrilled for this one. So that's essentially where I come out on that. Next, we have Thrasta, Tempest's Roar, for 10 green, legendary creature dinosaur, 7/7. This spell costs 3 less to cast for each other spell cast this turn. Huh. Trample over planeswalkers, haste. Thrasta, Tempest's Roar has hexproof as long as it's entered the battlefield this turn. Okay, let's work this out in reverse, okay? So, the fact that it's hexproof as long as it enters the battlefield this turn is good. I think that's a good ability. What else can I say? I like the fact that it's a not just a blanket hexproof. I do not like that. Like, Carnage Tyrant having hexproof all the time is rather frustrating to play against, and people don't really like hexproof as a mechanic. So this has a moderated or an adjusted hexproof clause, which seems decent. The trample over planeswalkers and haste, well, all those seem like strong abilities. Particularly you trample over the planeswalkers and just squash them, which I'm not sure how that one's going to work necessarily, but let's just say I'm pretty amenable to the idea. Now, the cost reduction mechanic here, this spell costs 3 less to cast for each other spell cast this turn. Well, I suppose this could be something where you could reap the benefits of your opponents playing spells on your turn. And if they, you know, a couple of them, yeah, for each other spell cast this turn. Yeah, I don't know, like, so maybe you could reap the benefits of, you know, somebody playing an instant speed on your turn, and all of a sudden you get to play your big old dinosaur, and away we go. I think the long and the short of this one is that it goes in, you know, the Gishath dragon deck, or dinosaur deck, and really goes nowhere else. I don't think you're going to really want to make this a mono green commander. I think it goes and plays in the 99. Oh, pardon me. I think it's a cool card. I think it's cool design space, but I have questions how good it's going to be, particularly 12 mana for a 7/7. Even if you can knock off some mana off the casting cost, I think I'd be looking for knock off at least 6, so which means 2 other spells have to get cast this turn, and then you still have to have 7 mana up. Nope, that's not quite right. 6 mana up. That's a big ask. So I'm not sure that cost reduction mechanic is overly pertinent. But anyway, cool card, and I like the artwork. The artwork is pretty snazzy, I have to say. Unmarked Grave. Well, this one did get my attention. So Unmarked Grave, 1 and a black for a sorcery. Search your library for a non-legendary card. Put that card into your graveyard. Then shuffle. So this seems strong. Mythic spoiler. I want to see. So Unmarked Grave is particularly good, you know, interesting when you can dump something pretty powerful as a reanimation target straight into your graveyard, and that seems probably pretty good. I mean, this effect is already it's played with things like Entomb or Buried Alive or Final Parting. Entomb does it for 1 mana, which is seems, you know, the upgrade to 2, like the move up to 2 is a thing, but 2's still pretty affordable. You can go and put something pretty scary as a reanimation target, so I think that's pretty appealing on the whole. So I think this is just a good card. People are going to play it a lot. They're going to play it a lot, and it's going to be reanimator graveyard decks. Going to put something scary in there, and then you're going to get it back out. Bottom line. Like, maybe it's a Titan, maybe it's, I don't know, because it can't truly be something like, it can't be a legendary creature, so that's, you know, a little limiting, but I think this is, you know, ultimately a fine card, one that people are going to want to play, and they're going to do some pretty gross reanimator things. Profane Tutor, this one's interesting. So, Profane Tutor, got no casting cost, but it's got a suspend cost for 2, and then 1 and a black. Search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle. So a delayed tutor effect is seems good. Is this going to be better than like something like Grim Tutor or Demonic? Well, clearly not Demonic. I think Diabolic might, you know, this might win out. It's definitely an interesting twist on the whole tutor package, because now it's delayed. You have to go 2 turns before you get your tutor, which, You know, it could be enough time to let your opponents, you know, knock you out of the game, particularly if they know you're going to go get your tutor or your combo piece and have, like, you're going to end the game. So, yeah, no, I'm not a huge, I think it'd be fine. How good is it going to be? I don't know. It's not something I tend to play. Maybe I'm going to be keen to try this one out and try it, take it for a test drive. I don't know. But, the puppy dog that we brought home is at my feet and gurring while he sleeps. So, pardon me if I chuckle a little bit. So, yeah, Profane Tutor. Seems interesting. We'll see. We'll see. I think the long story short of that one is that it's going to have to wait. It's going to need some time because it's pretty interesting. Grief, 2BB, creature, elemental incarnation, menace. It's a 3/2, and when grief enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. And then evoke, you can exile a black card from your hand. So, this seems good. Like, this sort of effect of, you know, incidentally thought seizing your opponent and getting a creature with menace seems good. How excited am I for this card? I'm not, to be perfectly honest. I don't particularly like discard decks. Much as I have one of my own, I don't really like playing it too much because it's kind of mean. But people who do, maybe, you know. Now, I want to be sure. Okay. We'll have to check out the ruling on how this all is going to play out. But essentially, in premise, the premise of, you know, black cards making my opponents discard cards and then me not seems good. Seems good. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. Again, hard to say in Commander if this is going to be good or not. But because it's on a creature, you can find ways to blink it. You know, so you do something like Conjurer's Closet, and next thing you know, you put in a black-white, you know, Taxes deck with Ephemerates or, you know, whatever else you're doing, Cloud Shifts, you know, whatever value you can get of blinking this. But this is a pretty nasty ETB trigger. So, I don't know. I'll have to see. Okay, Rishadan Dockhand. 1BB for a 1/2 creature, Merfolk. Island Walk, 1 tap, tap target land. Which could be just absolutely nothing, or it could be an absolute backbreaking play. Tapping a land. So I'm going to be just blunt here, folks. This is not my idea of a good time. Tapping lands is not my idea of a good time. I like the Island Walk, but I don't really much care for the second island tap target land. I don't like it, never have, so I'd be quite happy to see us not keep it. So, Rishadan Dockhand, no thanks. Timeless Dragon. Oh, I like this one. So 3WW for a 5/5 flying dragon with plane cycling. And then you can eternalize it for 2WW where you exile this card and it comes back as a token except as a 4/4 black zombie dragon with no mana cost. Eternalize only as a sorcery. So, okay. The reason I like this card is because this does a bunch of things for white that you want it to do. The first things that it does is it goes in cycles, which is good. It goes and gets you that land you need so that you continue to make your land drops. So if your Archaeomancer's map or your whatever other white trinket that makes you mana is not online yet, you need some. You can totally play at this plane cycle away the Timeless Dragon and have a look. Then, you know, let's say, heaven forbid, we crash land, or we get our dragon in the graveyard through the plane cycling, and we now need to you now want to eternalize it. Two white is really aggressive for an eternalized cost. So clearly they're incentivizing you to cycle it away and then on, you know, play it on turn four for the eternalized cost, and you get a 4/4 instead of a 5/5. But I think that's probably okay. It's, you know, it doesn't have a lot of other abilities, but I like this one. I think it's a, you know, an interesting card. I do like to see the eternalized mechanic come back. I think that made for some interesting stuff. This could easily go in a tokens deck where you're looking to, you know, tokenize the beefy dragon token, or maybe you're looking to to keep the, you know, maintain, I guess, what like the integrity of your white deck. I guess, I don't know, like there's some options here that are going to be interesting to see how people manage it. So, but I do like Timeless Dragon. Sorry. All right, and then Dakon Shadow Slayer. This one got me kind of excited. So white, blue, black for a legendary creature. Legendary Planeswalker Dakon. And then Dakon Shadow Slayer enters the battlefield with a number of loyalty counters equal to the number of lands you control, plus two surveil two. That's cool. I like the word. I like seeing surveil on my cards. -3 exile target creature. And then -6, you may put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. So I like this card. I like it because I think the surveil is excellent, and I think the -3 is very reasonable. Like it's a the surveil 2 is very good. The -3 is also good, but I'm not in love with the -6. I mean, it could be very, very broken depending on how you elect it to construct your deck, but I think more than anything, I'm just really looking forward to this interesting 3-mana walker that comes into play. It could be particularly a thorn in the side of everybody else, but yeah. All right, let's move on, because I think that's all the cards there. So let's move on to a couple of D&D ones. So from Dungeons & Dragons, we first off got Loth, Spider Queen. And then Loth, so for anybody who's not familiar, the Loth is the queen of the Drow, who are a species of dark elves that live underground and live in a particularly savage and brutal world. And she is their, I guess, for lack of a better word, patron saint. So she's 3BB, legendary planeswalker Loth. Whenever a creature you control dies, put a loyalty counter on Loth's loyalty counter. Yeah. So 0, draw a card, and you lose 1 life. -3, create 2 1/1 black spider creature tokens with menace and reach. And -8, you get an emblem with whenever an opponent is dealt combat damage by one or more creatures you control. If that player lost less than 8 life this turn, they lose life equal to the difference. So again, I really like the 0, the fact that you draw, and then you lose a life. I'm pretty okay with that. The fact that you can -3... you make some spider tokens. I like, this is kind of akin to Garrick, Cursed Huntsman, where he can't gain loyalty unless you kill his wolves. Well, this is just anytime a creature you control dies. So that's good. I can imagine a situation where Loth gets scooped out quickly, and adopted and turned into a pretty fun deck where you've got lots of tokens or lots of things and your opponents are wondering what you're doing back down there. So I kind of like Loth. I also think it's really cool to see Loth come to life in a card. I like it. I like Loth. I'm pretty excited for a chance to play with her. I think that's pretty much where I'm at. All right, next we have Drizzt Do'Urden. So Drizzt is one of the main protagonists from all the Forgotten Realms series that are printed. So Drizzt Do'Urden is a 3GW legendary creature elf ranger, which I'm glad they kind of got the alignment with his alleged church or god there for everyone to enjoy. When Driss Jordan enters the battlefield, create Gwen Hiver, a legendary 4/1 green cat creature token with trample. And then at the very bottom, we have whenever a creature dies, if it had power greater than Driss Jordan, put a number of +1/+1 counters on Driss equal to the difference. So, I like the art for starters. The art's amazing. I think the card captures the flavor of Drizzt. As someone who loved reading about him and his adventures when I was younger, this set is eliciting memories from when I was 12, 13, 14 years old and reading all the Forgotten Realms books, and couldn't get enough of them. And now they're on Magic cards, and I'm pretty excited for this. The fact that Gwen Hiver, he gets his cat token, his cat friend is also coming to play, is also pretty awesome. And then, yeah, so whatever creature dies, we have power greater than Driss Jordan. Oh, put a number of +1/+1 counters on Driss Jordan equal to the difference. That could be really powerful and turn Driss into a very big creature, but you're going to run into a situation where it's just going to outpace everything on the table, and then you're going to be stuck with an 8/8 dragon or something like that. But anyway. Alright. Carrying on. Last one, but not least, we have Brunor. Brunor Battlehammer. 2 red-white. Legendary creature, dwarf warrior. Now, in the story, Brunor is the king of Mithril Hall, who is essentially the dwarven tribe or dwarven group clan that has sheltered Drizzt for a long time now. And Drizzt and Bruno are fast friends, so I'm not surprised. I wonder how many more we'll see. We'll see Catabri, probably. We'll see. Anyway, Brunor, as the king of Mithril Hall, gets the following abilities. Is a 5/3 for 2 red-white, which is a pretty good stat. It's kind of a stat monster here. Each creature you control gets +2/+0 for each equipment attached to it. Okay, so you're playing an equipment deck, which seems very much red-white, so okay, keep going. You pay 0 rather than paying the equip cost of the first equip ability you have activated on. So, let's go backwards. So I have a equipment cost of 0 for the first time I want to move an equipment. That seems good. I mean, it doesn't clarify our issue, but I think it's good. And each creature you control gets +2/+0. Yeah, no, I think this is good. I think it's an interesting card. I think it's a little back to the old well of what red white does, but anyway, I can live with that. We've got something new with the lore holds, so we'll have to content ourselves for a bit. But I would have thought Brunor, could have bridged the gap between what lore hold was in the new configuration. So anyway, I think it's a fine card. Not crazy in love with it, but anyway, I think it's fine. Alright, let's close some stuff down because I got too many tabs open. Alright, let's go on to our last segment, which is going to be a deck. So, our deck tonight is the very first deck I ever brewed. Our very first deck I ever brewed was Lavinia of the Tenth, which is the Lavinia for 5 mana, so 3 white-blue, from Dragon's Maze, which largely got panned as being a set full of nothing good. But I liked Lavinia right from the get-go. So let's read Lavinia. Protection from red. When Lavinia the Tent enters the battlefield, detain each non-land permanent your opponents control with converted mana cost 4 or less. So that ability to detain stuff is pretty potent. Particularly when it can get all non-land permanents with mana value 4 or less. So you can do quite a number on people's mana rocks or their small mana dorks that they're running around with, and for a little bit there you can totally just derail them and make them really reevaluate what they're going to deploy against you. Hopefully that constrains them enough that some of the other things in the deck are going to get put to work. All right. The protection from red is mildly relevant with Lavinia. It's not something that I'm searching for actively, but, you know, it has won me games where I have no other way but to, you know, suit her up and then slip her by as my opponent plays a mono red deck. So, I'm just saying. So, the deck really wants to play as a control deck. Like, straight up, it wants to control as much as it can. So, it runs, I think it's 14 or 15 counter spells. So we got Arcane Denial, Archmage's Charm, Commit to Memory, Confirm Suspicions, Counterspell, Disappearing Act, Foil, Insidious Will, Negate, Overwhelming Denial, Render Silent, Scatter to the Winds. So Void Shatter, Syncopate. Like, you just got a pile of ways to counterspell stuff. All right, where do we get to? Okay. All right, so lots of counterspells. All right, then you're looking at lots of board control. So you're looking at things like, you're going to get your control magic. That's always fun. But you're going to have things like, where did they go? I'm losing my mind. Ah, yes. Things like Terminus. You have Supreme Verdict, Planar Cleansing, Phyrexian Rebirth. And, you know, between the counterspells and these board wipes, you're going to be able to control the board and hopefully keep it in a state where you can leverage your position into a win. It's not an easy win. It's not going to come fast, but you should be able to find it if you're a patient. So then moving on to the creature package. The creature package is a little on the expensive side. There's no doubt about it. The curve is not really a thing, but you know, we're playing 20 creatures, which is not very, pardon me. All right, but yeah, so your creatures are, you know, you got a lot of high impact creatures that are a little high on the curve, just making it a little bit tricky to resolve everything. But once you do, you're cooking with gas and away you go. So some of the creatures that jump off the page, I really like Angel of Sanctions. Other people don't, but I really do. I think it's particularly good. Angel of Invention I like a lot. I have Avacyn, Angel of Hope, which I think is something I'm going to keep regardless. Bruno Light and then Fading. Bruno's Fading Light. We have Clever Impersonator, Cloudbrazer, Diluvian Primordial. How does this deck want to play? It wants to control the board. It wants to control the board and then lock you down and put you in a spot where you really have a hard time fighting through their counter spells. I've given this deck out to be played by a friend of ours who is a very good control player. And he's like, yeah, I want to play your control deck. And I'm like, well, the fact that he's asking for my control deck when he has got ample cards to play whatever he wants to play is put a little feather in my cap. Some of the cards that, you know, stand out in terms of price wise, well, Avacyn, Angel of Hope's expensive, Lyra Dawnbringer is expensive. Then coming over in terms of other things, so the deck's fun. There's some interesting little nuggets of synergy here. The first one with the card Disappearing Act, which allows you to return a card with end of the battlefield triggers. You say, well, Bruce, you don't want to do that. I'm like, well, no, actually, I kind of do. Because, you know. But I really like Disappearing Act. I think it's a really good card. Probably criminally underplayed. I don't think it's a drawback at all. I think it's ultimately a win. So, yeah. There we have it. Fun deck. Check it out on moxfield.com under the username The Epic Experiment Podcast. You too can find it. I think you're going to find that it's reasonably priced at $182. It's a little on the pricey side, but there's got to remember, there's things like an Elspeth Sun's Champion, there's an Avacyn, Angel of Hope, there's a Helm of the Host, and a Lyra Dawnbringer, which right there you're dropping, you know, most of the way to, well, under $150 for sure. Getting down closer to where you want to be. Torrential Gear Hulk's $12. Like, you're talking about this. There are definitely some expensive cards lying around in this deck. Attakar Waste is a $10 rare land from Ice Age. So, just saying. Anyway. But yeah, no, that's the deck. Check it out if you're interested. I want to ask you questions. By all means, I'm happy to answer them. Let me know. And the link is down below. So, that is that. Let's move to wrap up the show. That's going to wrap up this week's show. I don't know how people liked it. I found it challenging not having someone else to have a conversation with. But if you liked what you heard all the same, we'd appreciate it. For some feedback, you can email us at theepicexperimentpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can contact us on Twitter at @epicexpcast. If you like all, you want to find our deck and all the decks for the generally, if you want to find all the decks, you can find them all on Moxville. Use the username the Expert Experiment Podcast. As always, with everything else, ask a question, leave a comment, like, follow, subscribe. Every little bit helps. Get the word out that we are here each and every week talking Commander for you guys. All right, folks. So, next week, we're going to have a guest again. We're going to be joined by Feff, in no small measure because it is episode 69, and she has made a special request to join us on once again, which seems like a personally very reasonable and adult thing to do. So happy to have Feff on next week. We'll probably talk some more MH2 and some more D&D. We'll see what happens. But there's lots of things happening. So be sure to join us next week for more to come. But that's until next week. So, there we go. This is the Epic Experiment Podcast signing off, wishing you all the best wherever you next play Magic. Thanks very much, everybody. Take care. Have a great night. Talk to you soon.